Hey, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar on adapting your training in the Regulation F era. There are a whole new host of red flags that collectors need to be on the lookout for, now that Regulation F has gone into effect. Collectors, regardless of experience, need to be trained on the ins and outs of the regulation and the changes that companies are making to comply with it. So today in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, there are a panel of training experts here to discuss how they have updated their training to coincide with the enactment of Regulation F. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source will help you take advantage of the spacing and testing effects. These concepts are proven to be among the most effective methods of learning improvement and knowledge retention. The focused iteration training capabilities of knowledge source will have a major impact on employee understanding and application of the skills required to collect more money in the laws and related policies and procedures that staff members must be compliant with. I just put a link in the chat that you can click on to visit peakrevenuelearning.com. And we're going to hear more from Chris Rickman from the company a little later in our program. Let me introduce you to our panelists for today. Mindy Chumley is co-owner of Solverity in Washington State. She's current vice president for the Washington Collectors Association. It serves on WCA's legislative and education committees. She holds several designations from AC International, including CCCO, as well as a BA in business administration and postgraduate work in business communications. Mindy's passionate about small business, her family, books, art, and volunteering within her local community. She believes we can navigate change with courage and that friendship with people with whom we don't agree is possible. Gwen Gullickson is a training manager at Century Credit. She's worked in the industry for the past decade and spent 2 years as the training manager, where she's responsible for all training, including first and third party collection. She loves rules and thrives in compliance. This is obviously a time of year just made for her. Michael Jeselnik is a 15-year veteran of the RM industry and started his career as a collector and worked his way up to his current role as general manager, overseeing all operations within Carter Young, located in Conyers, Georgia. Michael also serves as president of the Georgia Collectors Association. Our format for today will be a panel discussion. As always, everyone is encouraged to submit questions, and we'll get to them during the course of our conversation today. To submit a question, you can put it into the chat, or you can hit the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel and send it to us that way. All right, let's get started with our discussion. Michael, Gwen, Mindy, thank you so much for being here. I know it's been a week, you know, it doesn't feel like it, but it's been a week. So let's go around the panel and get a sense for how you feel your collectors are doing so far on the changes they had to make relative to Regulation F. And I'm going to pick on Michael to go first.
That's par for the course. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Mike. I appreciate it. And picking me first. So you say it's been a week, but I think of it more as, well, it's kind of been like a year and a week, you know. It's been a long time, and we've had a lot of time to prepare, and most of that time has been spent, I think, for most of us, understanding the rule ourselves, you know. And that's kind of been the first step for me, at least, is, you know, going through all the you wanted a rule, you got a rule, and you know, reading the rules and going through the five stages of grief while I'm reading it, and then finally coming up with some sort of, you know, some sort of training program to accommodate it and educate on it. But so far, so good. You know, we're doing well. Our collectors are fine. We're ratcheted down pretty tight right now, which is good. I would prefer that than being a little bit too loose. So we do have a little bit of collector frustration with some of that, but I'm going a pretty conservative route here, and I got to say it's I hate to say uneventful. If you can hear that, it's been fairly uneventful, and we made a big party of it, and as soon as it was released, and had a good time, and so far so good.
Excellent. Thank you. Mindy, why don't you share your experience so far?
Yeah, I agree. It was actually nice to get on with it. My people said they had a little bit of anxiety in those last couple weeks still in the old when they were ready to go on the new. And so getting both feet on the post November 30th felt good, actually. This Monday felt better than the 30th. And so we're making progress every day. But yeah, we're doing all right so far.
Okay, thanks. Gwen, how are your collectors doing so far?
My collectors are doing fine. I agree, too. We had a lot of time to prepare for this. Century's communication policies were already a little stricter than they needed to be. And so this was actually a real easy roll-in. Muscle memory is going to be a thing for people who are used to just like hammering through all their accounts and dialing everything that they can dial to get somebody on the phone. They have to slow up a little bit. How many calls has it had? How long the last time since we made an attempt? But other than that, I don't foresee any real big issues. I think the bigger struggle has been answering questions for clients than it has been trying to get my collectors to do anything new. They're not doing anything new. They're just being a little more aware than they were before.
All right. Can I submit a question to my fellow panelists?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. Who has been the hardest group of people to train on Regulation F? Is it your collectors? Is it the officers? Or is it your clients?
I mean, I don't deal directly with our clients very much, but the questions that I'm getting from my client services department have been a little more intense than the questions I am getting from the collectors on the floor. You know, we rolled it out with the collectors on the floor pretty well. Every client is going to have, they already have different specifications. So the questions that they have, even though they all seem pretty much the same, they're going to ask them a different way. They're going to have different hypothetical scenarios. So that's probably the hardest part, is people's hypothetical scenarios.
Yeah, and I think honestly, just the kind of angst that some of my clients have post-COVID here, having more regulation and some of those conversations, that's been the hardest hurdle, is why do we have to do all this? And, you know, managing those questions and convincing people that it's still worth placing and jumping through those hoops, that's been the hardest piece. But I'm grateful we're on the other side of that too. That, you know, that's done. The contracts are done and everything's signed. And that, but that was the hardest hurdle so far.
Yeah, I've got to say, for us, our collectors were they were the easiest part of this whole training puzzle, I think. While the, you know, previously mentioned, those were the harder ones to get to understand, for sure.
When you mentioned muscle memory, obviously the collectors have a lot of that, and Regulation F may have kind of, you know, forced some changes. Have you found that collectors have been able to overcome those muscle memory issues with respect to how they used to collect, or are you finding that they're still slipping back into that routine?
No, I mean, I think everybody's going to make mistakes from time to time, but for the most part, they've been very on top of it. It's a lot of questions coming from the floor, more uncertainty from vet collectors than I've had in a lot of time. Can I do this? Is this okay? Will you come look at this and make sure that I can call this, or how do we proceed with this? But I don't think that the changes have been as drastic as we thought that they were going to be until everything was implemented.
I totally agree. Our collectors they're adjusting well, and there's not much muscle memory involved. Maybe there is, but they don't have the option, you know? So how we've talked to our collectors or trained our collectors with regards to, you know, we'll say the 777 rule is, that, hey, we've got all of this technology in place that's going to stop these things from happening. Right. And we're just really, really highlighting to the collector, even though we have all these preventative based technology controls in place to stop these things from happening, you are the last control. You know, you are the last man at the gate here. And ultimately, you've got to make sure that these things are working. But I think our technology has really taken over to make it essentially impossible in some ways to break specifically like the 777 rule. So they've, I guess, mentally adjusted, you know, but as far as muscle memory, you know, right now they don't have the option, I suppose.
You know, the most obvious muscle memory one in our office was switching from like a FODI or Zortman into the limited content. And we just had everybody do daily habits the whole month before and practice saying the limited content. Like every single day they had to practice it on the hour. And that was just so that it would roll when they got a message instead of the old message. So I think that's one of those things. That's where muscle memory comes in. You know, you hear the message and you automatically, what you've done for years, But that's happened to industry before as new case law comes out and you switch. Sure. And so it's just one more of those. But we did do all the things, like we labeled up and put the new message and practiced. And so it's there because everybody knows what that feels like when you get on the phone and you hear the beep and it's like, oh, I forgot what I'm supposed to say. And so having it right in front of them, some of those little baby step things help.
I still have nightmares over the Fodi case. So,
right, exactly. It's like, oh, we have to do it right now. How?
Wow, that's a long message. So we switched to the LCM, shortly after the rules were released, because there wasn't a safe voicemail to leave. I mean, it didn't exist. So we made that switch pretty quickly. As well as changing some of our consent language and making sure that we're using the CFPB's terminology, like about the debt, communicate via email about the debt. So that's something we've been practicing for some time.
Okay. Excellent. I just want to hit the pause button briefly on our conversation. I want to invite Chris Berkman from Peak Revenue Learning, the sponsor of today's webinar, to say a few words. Chris.
Hello, Mike, and everyone else. We're grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides a knowledge source to leading workforce education, compliance, micro-learning training platform to companies with collection operations. Knowledge source is used by our staff members to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees, whether they are on-site or remote. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high assurance level that their staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge they need to interact with consumers. Knowledge Source automatically builds the documentation of your training efforts for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. For those of you that I haven't met or don't know, I've spent much of my career in the collection industry, in executive management of a collection firm. Knowledge Source was created to address many of the challenges and opportunities that we see in training new staff members. Use Knowledge Source to implement an ongoing continuous training cycle to reinforce the knowledge that you expect staff members to have. Present policies. Those could be collection, client, company policies during onboarding training, and at recurring schedules afterwards to gain acknowledgement that your staff members have read and understand those policies and procedures. Present tests during training events to validate that your folks have learned the subject material presented, and at recurring schedules afterward to certify staff members in areas such as the FDCPA, Regulation F, and others. Use Knowledge Source to present videos, slideshows, audio recordings in training courses, and even after you release them into their job function, to lower the amount of time for them to reach an acceptable level of proficiency, and afterwards, to maintain a focus on best practices. In summary, Knowledge Source will lower the cost of training, close knowledge gaps, promote accountability, and document for clients, existing and prospective, for regulators, for auditors of your company's proactive role in preventing errors, preventing compliance nonconformities, and in maximizing revenue. To find out more about Knowledge Source, please visit us at peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris. And thanks again to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Gwen, circling back to something you were talking about a little bit earlier, and that is questions you're getting from collectors are a little bit more, sort of active, you were saying, in terms of questions that you're getting. Can you talk a little bit about the types of questions that they're asking?
It was just, the first 2 days or so they'd come across an account. I talked to somebody and they said, call me back later this week. What do I do? Well, you call them in 7 days if you didn't get an exact follow-up time. We need client or consumer-specific callback requests to be able to basically fall in line with these guidelines. If you're not getting anything other than call me back later, well, that's, I mean, I've been doing this 10 years. All anybody's ever said to me on the phone is call me back later, right? That's why they set up guidelines for when the callbacks can take place.
Gwen, what are you doing about guaranteeing, or more importantly, not guaranteeing that you can call back exactly when a consumer requests? Because we're doing consents. You know, yes, we can try to call you back on Friday, but I don't want to be in the reverse position either, where, you know, maybe we had a power failure or something happened and we couldn't call them back, and then we've got liability. So we're doing something about, you know, I can't guarantee, but you can go to our website, that kind of thing. But what are you doing about those promises to call back?
I mean, similar, we have some programming in place that allows our collectors to set up reminders to call back people at a specific time. There are requirements on our calls to always end your call with your contact information. If I'm not able to get back to you at your request, please call me directly. Make sure you leave me a voicemail with your name and contact information so that I can call you back. Just a lot more kind of doubling down on our contact information and making sure that people have the ability to contact us themselves. And, you know, I've never hesitated to be forthcoming with a consumer on the phone either. I'm limited on when I can call you back. So if I'm not calling you back when you want me to, you know, give them a little ownership over that. Call me back when you're available and we can talk at your convenience.
Yeah, I agree totally. I just think people should be aware of that flip side of that.
Yeah, I think too many people are scared to tell us. Yeah, too many people are scared to tell a consumer what their limitations are. And I think that if you just tell people there are limitations on what I can do as far as contacting you, I think you get a lot more follow-up from the people who are serious about getting their stuff resolved, and a lot more tells from people who aren't so much. It's like, oh, well, then I guess you're not going to talk to me.
Right. No, and I think that's important in all of these is to remember like what our job is. Our job is to collect money for our clients and doing that respectfully and in compliance. Our job is not a telephone service. Our job is not, you know, all of these other things. And so remembering, if I don't, as long as I don't promise something, I don't have to call 43 times to this person that's requesting it.
No, yeah. Good communication, you know, will solve a lot of that.
Important. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it puts you in a better position of time management as well. When a consumer's asking you to call back, call me at 7 o'clock on the 7th, you know, right? How often do they pick up the phone when you communicate or attempt to communicate back with them during that time? You know, and for me, it's usually better to say, well, look, give me a call back at 7 o'clock on the 7th. All right. If I don't hear from you, you'd like me to give you a reminder call, right? You know, or something similar. Right. Yeah, this, and you know, everybody just keep in mind what Reg F is all about. It's all about consumer consent and consumer preference. You know, it's all about those two things. And if the consumer has a specific preference, more or less, I mean, you can do it. You can meet that preference.
Okay, so Michael, Mindy, sort of the same question that I posed to Gwen to each of you. Are you getting a lot more questions from collectors about sort of, you know, different aspects of either Regulation F or sort of how to kind of manage accounts or what to do in certain situations, or is that not, you know, what's been happening in your offices?
To an extent, I mean, we've been talking about this long enough where, you know, pretty much all the what if scenarios that might have come up have kind of already been resolved. You know, right now we've got or some of the controls that we have in place is we have telephone masking, so they can't make an outbound dial unless they're telling the system that, you know, X, Y, and Z is happening to meet certain requirements to even be able to view a telephone number to make it that manual dial. The inconvenient time or place controls, I do get a lot of questions over that one, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. It's like, well, the consumer said this, you know, does that mean it's inconvenient? You know, and my rule of thumb is just to say, okay, if you were he or if you were she, what would you have meant by that? You know, would that be inconvenient? And the challenge of just as soon as there's an indication that it's inconvenient to stop, you know, just stop talking, stop attempting to collect, and find out when would be a more convenient time for the consumer. And of course, documenting that, or if there's a different medium or mode of communication that the consumer might prefer. So those are most of the collector questions that I get.
Yeah, the collector questions I'm getting right now are really detailed, and they're having to do with like the interplay of Reg F with state laws. And I think that's actually a really good sign, because yeah. It means the big picture questions they've got right. And so when you get down and you're getting really detailed questions, you know that they understand, and they're asking questions that everyone's been asking. And you're like, okay, I think we're there, and we're in that gray now where we just got to do the best we can. But the big picture's
Every now and then I'll get some astute, you know, question. Yeah. I go, wow, damn, that's a really good question. You know, and I'm in a position where I have to make up the answer. But I don't, you know, if only there were a product out there, Chris Rickman, all right, that, you know, that we could use to have our collectors and our staff, you know, retain all of this information. And I'm not here necessarily for a knowledge source, but I am a user of it. And I'm telling you, that software has been absolutely pivotal in our knowledge retention of our Reg F training for our collectors. And not just Reg F training, a lot of other areas as well. So if you don't have it, I recommend you buy it.
Let's talk a little bit about training, which is, you know, one of the topics for today, with respect to sort of, you know, your current employees who you had to kind of retrain or teach them about Regulation F versus new employees or new hires who are coming into the company. Are you approaching that differently, or is everyone kind of getting the same training? Mindy, maybe you can kick us off this time.
You know, it's funny you ask. I have a new person starting tomorrow. So I kind of went through, and it is interesting because all the available current FDCPA stuff isn't perfect anymore. And so you kind of have to run them through a brand new FDCPA and say, okay, but hold on, because there's another layer we're going to add once you get a grasp on that. And so we're really rethinking how we're doing our new training to put those together at the same time, rather, because everybody else had a really solid FDCPA and then you added, or, you know, FCRA, whatever your base, they had that solid, and then adding Reg F and doing it together is interesting. It's definitely requiring a shift. It'll be fine, but we're having to rethink it.
Wait, you have a new hire?
I do. I'm so excited. <All right. laughs>
I've been able to avoid this issue, Mike.
Don't hire anybody. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, you know, just keep in mind that the CFPB, they don't have legislative authority. It's rulemaking authority. So everything is still, it's still FDCPA.
Right.
So the way that I've looked at it is it changes my talking points when I'm training FDCPA. So when we start going over things like, you know, the placement of telephone calls with the intent to annoy, abuse, or harass, you know, some of my talking points are, well, how many calls are that? Is that? Well, we don't really know. You know, it depends on the circumstance, depends on the jurisdiction. Well, with regard to Reg F, now we know. All right. Now we know how many calls are too many over yeah. what period of time, you know? So, yeah, I just think take your normal FDCPA training and then just insert the clarity that the Bureau spent so much time and so much work creating for us.
You know, I think to add to that, I think one of the things that we have to do is really be smarter in how we're approaching our industry. And so the person I hired, actually, she just got her master's degree. And what she did for her master's thesis was she analyzed redacted phone calls between medical providers and their patients to track what language caused the best behavior change. And I'm like, I can use that. And so really leaning into, she's going to help us write tighter scripts, right? And so I think as our opportunities shrink in the tools we have to use or the ways we have to do that, we have to be really intentional about the things that we have left. And so those conversations have to be precise So that's the kind of thing we're trained to do, is back up a little bit and approach every call with the most intentionality, because you can't just wing it anymore and still get money coming in.
Could you ever? You know,
well, I guess, yeah, you could, because it was a wider funnel, and now the funnel's tighter. So you got to be a little bit. No, I mean, you know, yeah, you're right, Michael. I mean, obviously, if we'd done that 10 years ago, we would have made more money and been better for our clients. But I think it's going to be even more important that we be intelligent about how we approach the industry.
Undoubtedly. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, and as soon as I said that, Mindy, I was thinking, yeah, okay, all right. You know,
no, you're totally right. Absolutely.
20-year-old me or 22-year-old me, you know, and some of the insanity that was coming out of my mouth.
Yeah.
But I believe I love what you're doing, you know, is measuring and tracking, you know, does this phraseology work? You know, that's really important. I think there's a lot to learn from sabermetrics in baseball and debt collection, you know, when it comes to what is the most effective thing to say to in this scenario.
Right. Because we're going to get fewer opportunities to get it right, I think, with each individual consumer. And so if you can, you know, up your percent on each call, you're going to have more success, especially with the kind of legal landmines. Like, you got to get it right. So.
Semantics.
Yeah.
So you're looking at it, you're using this, or you've used this as an opportunity to kind of take a step back and sort of look at everything, sort of the entire process as a whole, not just what do we need to do about sort of, you know, Regulation F.
Well, that's where we're putting our investment dollars, right? I'm a little agency. And so, you know, some of my colleagues in big, massive agencies can attack it with big technology. And that's certainly a route. But I believe there's a place for little. And I think it's done with that intelligent personal connection and those words. And so I think there's still room for a variety of approaches to get it done. But everybody, regardless of your size, has to lean into some kind of investment to get it right, whatever that looks like in your context.
Michael, Gwen, I mean, in terms of the philosophy of that particular strategy, sort of taking a step back now, I guess, that Regulation F is in effect, or even before, and kind of looking at your process and sort of identifying ways that, you know, might be streamlined or productivity on top of kind of dealing with, you know, all the changes from Regulation F. Is that something, you know, you would recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing that now. I have a class, she said she just has a new hire. I have a class of 5 people starting next week. And so I got all our materials for everybody that's already here updated. And I handled all the people that currently work here, and they've got it down, and I'm rolling forward with them. But there's a whole new class of people going to come in, and I have to figure out, okay, do I know this as well as I think I do? Am I going to be able to present this to new people who haven't done this before and make it as efficient as all this training has been up until this point? And so I think absolutely. We're definitely looking at everything. My manual is this thick, and now I get to go through the whole thing again. I thought I got the key points on it while we updated all this stuff, but I know as I go through and teach this class, I'm going to come across things and be like, "Dad, that used to be true, but now it's this."
Hey, look, everything's changing all the time. You know, I was wrapping up some state disclosures and doing something with a specific state, and literally right when I finish, you know, I get an email that says, "All right, New York may be changing its statute of limitations in 3 years." And I'm going, oh my gosh. Just, all right.
Adapt and overcome. It's all you can do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's so yeah, that's great. Yeah, we're not hiring.
That's one way to do it.
There is so much going on, you know, and I didn't particularly feel comfortable, at least hiring on our collection side. You know, that's not something that we're doing, but hiring on more of our administrative side, that is something that we are doing, because I think we can all expect that the bottom portion of that model validation notice is going to come back in droves. You know, so we're just trying to prepare for that.
So Carter Young is kind of like the Hotel California.
Um,
you check out any, no one can ever leave now.
Yeah, I like that. That's that works. I got to run it by HR, but I think it checks. I think it checks out.
If nobody ever leaves, then you don't ever have to worry about hiring anybody, right?
Yeah. Hey, we've got a couple of people like that. You know, we've got some folks that have retired and been here for, you know, 17 years. You know, I figure we're doing something right.
I'm sure you absolutely. Mindy, you talked about the limited content message and having your collector sort of practice it over and over again. Are there other methods or tools that you found to be effective in helping kind of train your employees or retrain them? Or has that repetition been the best tool that you found to have?
You know, this is kind of goofy, but we did Survey Monkeys on everything just because they're quick and people think they're fun to do. And so we'll do kind of a goofy couple questions. What's your favorite book? What do you want for lunch? Rattle off the limited content message, and then we'll just see what comes back on the, and so the spot checks are helpful because it gets people thinking, oh, she really means it. And so we do that. And then we did some role playing so that there's something about saying it to yourself and there's something about saying it to somebody else.
Okay. Michael, you know, as you got your collectors ready, you know, what methods, tools? I know you mentioned Knowledge Source. Was there, you know, other than that, or if you want to go into more detail about how you use that particular platform, the resources and tools that you use to train your employees on the changes?
Sure. So not specific, I'm answering this for training a collection agency as a whole. You know, my method was, you know, focus on departments. You know, that was the first step. Well, I mean, first step, you know, make sure I understand this shit, you know, that's the first step. Second step, break everything down by departments. You know, do your collectors need to understand how to process duplicative disputes? You know, probably not. You know, it's good for them to know that information, but you know, that's something that I would focus on our dispute department, investigation department on. That's something more important to them. For client services, they really, really needed to understand the model validation notice and the itemization dates because they were the ones that are having to communicate with our clients and get this information. And of course, our collectors got to know more about the inconvenient time or place, the 777 rule, you know, what not to say. So breaking everything down at a department level and getting everybody knowledgeable in those particular areas, and then using the software Knowledge Source to go ahead and reinforce, you know, whatever that particular subject matter is that they were trained on. And then eventually everybody coming full circle and being presented material that covers Reg F as a whole. So that's how I sort of broke it down, just to kind of keep myself sane and make sure that the people in this specific role understand this specific part of the new rules.
Looking back on it, any changes you'd make over that process, or are you satisfied with the way it, you know, ended up going?
I probably should have gone into a different profession.
Way back.
I don't think so. You know, we made it fun. Upon my first reading, I was pretty critical of the rule. But the more I read about it, the more I learned about it. You know, I've hopefully I don't get kicked off of these webinars forever for saying this, but I'm kind of a fan of the rule because it brings clarity where, you know, there was a lot of confusion. It's not perfect, all right, by any stretch of the imagination, but no, so far, no regrets. I think, ask me again in 6 months, but yeah, I think everybody's pretty happy. You know, they've learned it. We were bored for compliance or for, you know, Knowledge Source scoring. And yeah, so far, so good. I'm pretty happy.
To ask you back means I got to have you on another webinar, though.
Fair enough.
All right. I did want to dive into something you mentioned just in a comment during your last answer, but I think it's important. You said made it fun. Can you talk a little bit about that? You know, either how you made it fun or why that was important.
I think it's always important. This is such a difficult job. I mean, for everybody, you think about what a collector has to do on the phone. The conversation that we're having is inherently negative. I mean, it doesn't have to be a negative conversation, but we're talking about debt. You know, I mean, what could be more negative than that? Constantly getting told no all the time. You're always having to look over your shoulder for call baiters. You got me breathing down your neck saying, okay, you got to say this. You got all these compliance rules, and you got so much to keep up with. We have to have something to offset that. I like using a lot of props. It just makes things a little bit memorable. And understanding that, you know, whenever you give a lecture, it is proven to be the worst method of learning that you could do. Even though I'm like really good at it, you know, I recognize if I lecture, the person's only walking away with 10% of whatever it is that I'm saying. So making things interactive, using props, and most importantly, incentivizing compliance, incentivizing correct answers or public accolades or whatever, you know. So for the release of Reg F, you know, we kind of had a party and made a celebration out of it so that it wasn't, you know, everybody come in and stressed out, oh my gosh, Reg F, you know, just, hey, it's all cool. You know what to do. You know the correct answers. And I know you know the correct answers because I can see your scores. So, make everything fun. All right. It's compliance. We have to do it. You know, I mean, there's no sense in moping about it. Do it. Have a good time. Collect some money and learn something. You know, maybe not in that order, but.
You know what else I've seen that helps is if I do a test for all my people, if I take it too, it really helps people. And sometimes, you know, lots of times they'll beat me on the score. And, you know, then I have to retake it. That kind of like open honesty leadership down really can encourage your floor. And so if your team leads take it or participate, that kind of buy-in helps people. And I'm a small office, so it may just be your department leads, but that kind of willingness to jump through the ropes yourself shows it's not this cheesy thing, but that it's important and that you value it enough to run through it yourself. And it can really encourage your team.
Yeah, we really, really focused to begin with on retention rate and not necessarily did you get the question right or wrong the first time you saw it.
Yeah.
You know, that's less important than did you retain it the next time you saw it.
Yeah, or
the
next, you know, it a week later. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have high fives going all around, and yeah, I'm 100% with you, Mindy. It's having your supervisors or your management staff or yourself, you know, hop in there and, you know, prove yourself, I suppose, or show there's equality across the board is really good for morale, especially.
Yep.
Unless you don't do well.
Well, even then, there's that humility doesn't hurt anybody to be able to say, hey, we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to get caught. And I'm right there with you learning this. And I don't buy that leadership is perfect and everybody else, you know, that's not how this works. And so being able to be humble enough to say, oh, yeah, you beat me. I'm going to go take it again and get 100% or whatever. And so that there's just some grace across your team. It helps people breathe and not feel quite so anxious too.
Yeah, every now and then I'll give myself a call review and I'm going, oh man, come on, you wrote that. What are you doing?
Yeah. Right. Well, and then the fun thing is, so we had that. We totally had an entrapment call last week. It was not my favorite. But it's fine. And I've had them where I was the one on the other end of the phone. And so being able to play that call and say, okay, listen to what I did and listen to, I did this really well and this not so great. And being able to let people hear me analyze, you know, my own call or having them analyze that call, sometimes that can help people understand that this is not about us like looking down on you. This is about, or even compliance or non-compliance, finding those things and listening to them as a team. It's not about somebody getting in trouble. That's not what it's about. It's about us all doing our work with excellence. And so if I'm willing to be vulnerable enough to say, oh yeah, I could have handled this faster on that entrapment call, I could have got off quicker and here's how, that training and showing people, it really, really helps people to calm down. And when people are calmer, they make better decisions. When they're anxious, that's when you start getting panicky responses. You don't want anxious people on the phone.
Yeah, we can all learn from each other. I'm kind of curious, you mentioned call baiting. So what do you guys think the next call baiting trend will be?
Oh, there's lunch. I think I'm not an attorney, so I cannot give legal advice. And this is just me kind of listening over the last year. But I think the model validation letter, after a few nasty lawsuits, you know, is going to shrink maybe some of the opportunities for consumer attorneys in that area. And so then I think that there may be some more of our colleagues on the other side using call baiting as an opportunity. And the really nice thing about call baiting is you can train. You know, you can't.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. And so it's better than some of the other things but you got to train on it. And I think there's going to be a bunch. I think there's going to be people who, you know, give conflicting consent and then suddenly, or they send an email and then they call you and which one is the consent. I just think there's going to be some really creative things. We all need to really watch those inbound timings to make sure we're not caught.
Yeah. Call me between 158 and 159.
Yes. Right. That's right.
And then just
stuff.
Wait.
Yeah,
that's killing that one. It's done.
Yeah, no, no, that's quite all right. We don't need to call you.
what about you, Gwen? What do you predict will be the next call bait trend? I'm kind of curious.
And I don't know. I'm interested. People are so much more educated now as consumers as to like what the rules are that we have to follow than even when I started this. And so people. Just having the knowledge of the do's and don'ts when you get somebody, say you get somebody who's fresh on the phone and they make a mistake, people want to take that all the way to the end and they don't give the leniency of humans making human error. So I worry more about my new people making a mistake than my old people with the call baiting. But I agree with Mindy, you can train people how to deflect a call baited call. We run a red flag policy around here where we make people be aware of what those calls look like, basically. Like, don't get sucked into them. It's a conscious effort on the phone. You have to always be paying attention to what your consumer is saying too. It's real easy to get caught up when you are just going with the motions of your call and you're not active listening to the people that you're talking to, because that I think is where those problems come from, is where people aren't listening to what's happening on the call.
One of the things that I think is going to be right now is anybody who's calling in and asking you using the words itemization date, that should be like, ooh, red flag, because it's not on that model validation anywhere. So if a consumer is asking you about that, they watched some YouTube or they talked to somebody.
Right. The information is out there now. My mom tagged me in something on Facebook last week about Reg F. I was like, could you please not do that?
There's a lot of misinformation out there as well. You know, I mean,
it's terrible, terrible information.
Some of the correlations that these folks are making, and I get it, I'm not completely unempathetic to what desperation might make a consumer do, but yeah, they're getting wilder and wilder sometimes with some of these catch 22s that they believe exist that maybe don't exist. But Mindy, right. I'm telling you, itemization date, I'm with you. I think that'll be the next call bait. Explain the itemization date to me.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, let me put you on hold. You can talk to the supervisor. That's like our magic words. Do not talk to that person.
Yeah, sure, no problem. It's December 7th and $142. All right.
Yeah, and that's something our clients provided. Smile, get off the call.
Gwen, I wanted to give you a chance to sort of chime in on what we were talking about with respect to sort of making it fun, the incentives that they, you know, that might be offered. Just to sort of get a sense if that was something that you were doing in your training as well.
I don't know about incentivizing it. It has something that has been tossed around with our operations department, trying to create something for the compliant collector, because it's getting harder and harder to kind of roll everything in together and make people still feel valued while you're correcting them on these compliance mistakes that you're making, right? I don't want to discourage anybody from wanting to continue to do this, but it's important to maintain that. We are very interactive on that side. We have a rolling document on our internal intranet where basically you can pump in all these frequently asked questions, and I try to be on top of everything. I'm in charge of the whole thing, so it's a lot of information to be pumping out on a regular basis. But basically, if you have a question, you are probably not the only one that has a question. So if you can get it to me and I can get that information to everybody, we can all be on the same page. And so I don't know that we're fun, but we are very interactive. We try to make sure that anybody who needs this information has access to it and can use it. And if you don't, we're going to make it as available as possible, as quick as possible, so that everybody can get their questions answered.
Gwen, you need more chocolate.
I do have a prize bucket.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Celebrations and stuff. I mean, I have fun stuff, but this has not been a fun scenario so far in the office. It's more about trying to get everybody in line with it. But for my collectors who are compliant in our call calibrations, we have stickers, we have a prize bucket, their desks are fully decorated with my joy.
Fun. That's so good. Well, and I try to talk about, and we don't do this yet, but you bring up a good idea that maybe we should do like a sympathy chocolate with every non-compliance report. Because again, it's not about shame, it's about learning and getting it right, so that they're not quite so.
I've found that calibrating as groups, like if we have a certain client group where everybody's working the same thing, we pull those calls together. It is a lot more effective when their peers are telling them how they could have done a call differently than when it's me all the time finding things that are wrong with a phone call. I'm real good at that. But
I know, and it's important, but it's a bummer too. And
right.
And you just got to walk that shame line.
Incentivizing. Doesn't necessarily say positive incentivizing.
So, hey, you got an compliment. Yeah, not that. But at the same time, yay. Yeah, I especially appreciate when my team will like self-report. That is something that should be rewarded, because yes, you made an error, but you told me, you know, while we still had an ability to fix it or to mitigate it or whatever it is. So self-reporting, that is something that should be celebrated, even if it is tied to an error.
Right.
Sure.
I agree.
How much of Regulation F should employees know about? Michael, you were talking about sort of going department by department. Were you compartmentalizing which each department was, you know, kind of taught or trained about Reg F, or were you looking to sort of just teach everybody about it? Or as much as, you know, they need to, or is it more on a need to know basis?
I started department to department, because that was just on my list of priorities that made the most sense. And it was just prioritized in that way. Once I'm assured that each department is well-versed in whatever their specific area is, then I kind of open it up, because I think it's valuable to have everybody in our office understand maybe what somebody else in another department is going through. And they may find themselves in a similar situation, you know, or perhaps maybe somebody wants to move to a different department. You know, that's a possibility as well. So I want everybody to know everything, you know, as much as I possibly can. And, you know, if somebody leaves Carter Young and they go to some other agency, I want them to know more than anybody else, you know, at that agency. And I want them to be valued. So, I think it just, depending on how your time restrictions are, if you can do it, teach everybody everything. It's good for everybody to know what everybody else has to comply with.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and an obvious point is like, sometimes we forget our sales team or our client services team. And in reality, they should know more than anybody in the office, because what they bring in or what they tell our clients is downstream really important. And so I agree with you, Michael, cross board, the more everybody knows, and it builds more team camaraderie too, because you understand, oh, what my people in the back do an e-Oscar all day long, why they matter. And, you know, and so there's less, competition between departments, but more a team effort and understanding why those departments exist and why it's important.
We bring somebody from admin or somebody from data entry or wherever. And, yeah. You know, oftentimes we'll bring them and get them a seat on the collection floor, like right in the middle, you yeah. know, so that they can kind of experience, you know, what's going on. It hasn't been reciprocal yet where I've, you know, taken a collector and then put them in, you know, like a really quiet environment of administration, but maybe we'll do that someday and they'll be begging to come back. I don't know.
Yeah. I think information all around, knowledge is power. You have a building full of debt collectors. Those are people who are prone to ask the question, why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is a big part definition. Of it?
Michael and Mindy, Gwen was talking about how, you know, questions that she's getting, they're sort of being shared with everybody else because, you know, as she mentioned, a lot of people often have the same question. Is that something that you're trying to do too, is sort of pool information or sort of create some sort of centralized source so that people can kind of, you know, if there is a question that's been asked, you know, they go there first?
Everybody has access to the regulation, with a few restrictions. You know, I didn't put all the commentary or anything in there, but you know, they do have access to the rule. They do have access to the FDCPA. So they always have access to be able to review maybe what they're answering or, you know, if they get something wrong, maybe, in a question, which I don't even look at it like that. I look at it as, they just learned something new. They're able to go a little bit deeper if they want to research it. But we did just recently change softwares, you know, a couple of months ago. So, you know, I had a lot of questions in regards to that. And, you know, keeping up with that, we just had to create a hierarchy structure of, you know, if you have a question, first review these help documents and then go to your supervisor and supervisor, I don't want to hear them piecemeal one at a time, compile them and send them to me, you know, once every other day or once a week so I can try to keep myself organized and getting them answered. And it's been similar with Reg F and the questions that we have got.
Yeah, so I write, so everybody has access to all the time, policy, procedure, work instructions, and their scripts, so that if a change happens, everybody has access to it. But what I do is I just write down any questions I get during the week. And then during that next week's office meeting, and lately we've been having them twice a week because there's just too much. But I go over all the questions so that I'm answering them for everybody to keep everybody on the same page. So I'm not putting that in writing, those questions, but everybody hears the answers.
A question from the audience. We've got a few minutes left. What is the biggest change you've had to make? I'll throw it open to whoever wants to go first.
I have a lot more audits I have to do on making sure just that we hit all the points that we're saying we're hitting. Did we over dial anywhere? What do we do about that? How do we fix it if it happens?
I think credit reporting, the new credit reporting rule, that was a lot of process change and a big back audit. It's done though.
Mostly drinking.
That was just COVID.
You were doing that before. Don't say that's a big change.
I don't know. So I think the biggest change was data imports from our clients and getting client services to understand itemization dates well enough to be able to easily communicate with our clients, because I don't think there's anybody that will disagree with me that was probably, at least for me, it was the most confusing part of Regulation F on working out, okay, itemization date, what does that look like for this client? What does that look like for this account? What does that look like for this? And I think that was the biggest challenge, was getting that department to understand it well enough to explain it simply.
Yeah, that was fun.
And also understanding it myself. You know, I had a lot of trouble with that particular section. I don't like to admit it.
We did have someone put it in the chat. They created their own FAQ a while back and posted it to their SharePoint website. And that's kind of part and parcel of this, you know, what we've been talking about. Let's see here. Any other, I'm just looking for other sort of training, training related questions. A lot of questions that came in, but some are not really sort of relevant to the topic. You know, while I look for that, what I'll do is I'll give each of you a chance to sort of share a parting thought, a last word, summarize what you know, if you want to summarize what you think the most important thing is today, or what the most important takeaway is for anybody with respect to training and Regulation F, or, you know, something you didn't want, you wanted to say, but didn't get a chance to, give everyone a chance to share a parting word. And Gwen, we'll start with you.
With me. Okay, great. Well, mine would just be kind of what it always is. We're going to adapt and overcome. There's going to be changes with this that we probably haven't even considered yet. We're going to come across something where it's like, oh, okay, well, what do we do now? We're going to figure it out. We're going to move on. Century's been doing this for almost 30 years now. And so far we're going strong. So I have confidence in the team here because it is not just me. There's a lot of departments playing into this and making sure that it all runs smoothly. And I think that as long as we continue with that same momentum, that I don't think Regulation F is going to be this big, scary thing in the long run.
Good advice. Thank you. Mindy?
Yeah, I said it already, but I'll lean in again that I don't think shame has any part in training or in compliance, and that if you can take a look at how you respond to or how your whole organization responds to when people make errors and when they self-report, and that piece of culture is really critical. And then backing up and really approaching your talk offs with intelligence, leaning into the best methods, I think is how we're going to succeed.
I love it. I agree with both you guys. Mindy, I've made every possible mistake anybody could make in every area. For sure. You learn from your errors, not from your successes. Fortunately, it was on somebody else's dime and not Carter Young's. So, you know, I would say to all our agency friends out there, Reg F is a lot, all right? It is a lot. And really, really focus on the most important things right now. And, you know, if you don't have letters going out, you know, look into some alternatives. Okay. You have other modes and mediums of communication that you can use to get those out. If you've got letters, but maybe you're having difficulty with the technology behind the 777 rule, you know, reach out to some of your friends or hop on accountsrecovery.net and go watch John Bedard talk about you wanted to rule, you've got a rule. But just if you're not completely there yet, just calm down. You know, you will get there and focus on the things that are most important, and you'll get there. I promise. Just keep your sanity until that point.
Excellent. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I want to thank Michael, Mindy, and Gwen for taking time out of their busy schedules to share their insights, their expertise, and their perspectives with us. I really appreciate each of you participating today. Thanks to the audience. I appreciate you being here. It was a great engagement in the chat. A lot of good questions that came in. We're back tomorrow, 1 o'clock Eastern, with a webinar, the new California licensing law that goes into effect now in 24 days. We're past Regulation F. Now you got to deal with the California licensing law. If you're collecting there, you got 24 days now to get your application in. So we've got a panel of experts to answer your questions and help walk you through that process. So if you haven't signed up for that, there's a link on the events calendar of accountsrecovery.net. So we hope to see you back at 1 o'clock tomorrow for that. And one final shout out to Peak Revenue Learning and Chris Brickman for sponsoring today's webinar. I appreciate their support. PeakRevenueLearning.com is a website. Encourage everybody to check it out when they get a chance. So one last time, panel, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to talking to everybody soon. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow.